Hello and welcome to Expert Talk. I'm your host, John Parker, and I'm going to be joined today by Richard Faulkner, who's an advanced technical field consultant through Rentokil. We're going to be talking today around fleas and their kind of significant importance in terms of, you know, what can you be looking out for in terms of in your house and how can we go about treating them and things like that. So, hi Richard, thank you for joining me.
Morning, John. My pleasure.
Okay, so fleas. We're going to be looking today around about fleas. So talk to us about how we would actually end up getting fleas into our house.
So one of the most common routes that you'll get fleas coming into your house is with your companion animals, so with your pets, especially cats and dogs. They bring them in. They're a natural host for the flea. So the adult fleas will be picked up outside. They'll be brought into the house. The fleas will blood feed on your pets. And then they will sort of hop off, they'll lay eggs, and that's really how they get in and start becoming an infestation in the house.
And there's different species of fleas, isn't there? So it's not just like one particular flea, there's loads of different species, isn't there, right?
No, there's a whole smorgasbord of flea species. The most common ones are the cat flea and the dog flea, but they're like hedgehog fleas, there's bird fleas, bat fleas, even a human flea, which is actually very, very rare these days.
And it's not as if you can actually really tell the difference between one and the other unless you get one under the microscope, is that right?
No, again, yeah, it's all about the brushes and combs, especially around the head area of the flea, and it's quite an involved process of identification using magnification.
And what is the biggest thing that we would have to be concerned about in regards to having fleas in our home? What would be the dangers?
So a lot of it is the actual nuisance factor when they start biting humans. There are diseases that are associated with fleas. The biggest one was the bubonic plague, which is heavily, heavily documented, which was a major sort of pandemic that was spread by the fleas, which were on rats at the time. It was fleas and also biting lice as well. But it was down to fleas, so they were known to transmit that. They're also associated with a disease that in North America called marine typhus, which again is quite rare, but again it's from flea bites, but it's more the nuisance factor of flea bites these days. So fleas are biting, it's like with any bite, if somebody scratches it and they've got a little bit of dirt or bacteria under their nails, then they can cause infection and sort of inflammation and welts and that sort of thing.
Well, that was one of the key things I was going to come back to, is the actual infection of the actual bite is probably the most significant probably in this hemisphere in terms of disease transmission and stuff like that from fleas. I know you said bubonic plague, but that's going back a while, isn't it?
It is going back a long, long while, but historically, like, it was quite significant. It did kill millions of people. Yeah. But that's the historical sort of factor they've got with it. There's a little bit of, as I said, marine typhus is the main one, but here it's more of a nuisance factor.
They can lead to a psychosomatic kind of symptom, isn't it, as well as what we call, you know, I can barely get it into my head now.
Delusionary parasitosis.
Delusionary parasitosis, that's it.
Yeah.
And it kind of comes from this nuisance factor what you're talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's one of those things, even when you start talking about a biting insect or fleas, you find yourself itching, and it's a natural sort of response. And then when you've been exposed to fleas, you do become more sort of sensitive. And then again, as you said, psychosomatic factors, you'll start scratching, you'll notice, you might think you're getting bitten when you're not, well after the fleas have gone. So that definitely can be an add-on factor from it.
And so what kind of advice could we give to, say, our customers, whether it's in domestic properties, commercial properties, to try and help them deal with fleas or even prevent them from coming in?
So if we start off, first of all, if we look at fleas' life cycle, so they start off as eggs, these hatch out into larvae. The larvae are protein feeders. They don't actually blood feed. They're totally different from the adult, but they do feed on like the fecal pellets of the adults, and they feed on like skin particles, bits of hair particles, protein that's around in the environment. They then pupate, and the pupa stage is sort of the interesting stage of it in a way, because at this point, if there's no host, then the pupa will lay in a state of dormancy at this point, and it will just wait literally for the presence of a potential host. And they sense this by vibration, rising levels of carbon dioxide, and from body heat. So you could think a flea, if you left the building, you could think that the flea population would die out. They won't, the pupae will just wait. And then when somebody comes in or a pet comes back in, then this will trigger the emergence of the adults from the pupae who've gone through this diapause, this suspended animation state, and they'll come out and then they'll start biting.
And I think it's quite important to kind of know that, because as another route of potential ingress into the house is secondhand furniture, secondhand items of clothes, potentially things like that. So that state of suspended animation, or as we'd like to call it, you know, it's kind of like Han Solo going into the carbonite, you know, it's kind of like that kind of scenario.
He's in his diapause phase, he's just sitting there waiting. Exactly. And that's the thing. So that's actually another good route in, as you said, John, secondhand furniture stuff. Other thing to be aware is if you've got birds nesting around your building as well, birds will potentially have fleas. If you have a lot of wildlife coming in your garden, lots of wildlife, things like badgers, foxes, hedgehogs, they all carry fleas at different times. Our rodents as well, especially common rats. Lots of studies have been done where they've been trapping rats on farm, and the amount of ectoparasites they carry, including fleas, is a very high percentage of those animals. So they are all other routes where they can be in and around your environment, and then they're picked up by either you and your pets and they come in.
So another thing that you mentioned there when we were talking about through the life cycles, and we were talking about the diapause, and one of the important things is to get the fleas out, because we need the fleas to actively come out, especially if we're doing a chemical treatment. We need them to come out, because if they go and stay in diapause, they're not going to come into contact with the chemical, which is actually going to do the chemical, which is actually going to do the killing. So the important thing that I heard you say there was movement, vibration, CO2. So
body heat, yeah, all those good things.
So realistically, you know, we hear it all the time about people leaving their property to, you know, because they want to wait until the fleas are sorted, so they literally move out. So that can actually have an impact on our treatment.
Exactly. It can have an impact on the treatment. And the treatment and looking at the biology of the insect is really important. So our eggs, our larvae and our pupae are usually nowhere near the host animal. They might be in the bedding. They could be in our carpets, in our wall floor junctions. As you said, they could be in our furniture. So when we're looking at treatment, when we're advising people when we're coming in, the first thing a customer really needs to do is give a thorough clean. If they thoroughly clean, hoover up, it's going to remove the eggs, the larvae and the pupae. Make sure that they get rid of the hoover bag or empty the hoover bag outside away. And then we need to sort of look at treatment. We talked as well about our companion animals, our pets. Again, pest controllers do not treat pets, so please don't ask us to, but make sure that you go to your vet and get a proper veterinary treatment for your animal. Because if all we do is do the pest control treatment, the animal's still going to be there as a vector and you're going to get reinfestation. So it's just important to make sure that they do that.
So in terms of ways of preventing them is one, keeping your pets kind of up to date in terms of their flea treatments and things like that. If we do get them in our premise, one, stay in the premise, which it's quite an important thing for them to do. I know it's not pleasant, but stay in there.
Yeah.
Two, thoroughly clean. The third one would be thoroughly clean, like you've said there. Hoovering down, you know, helps remove the eggs, the larvae and the pupae as well, makes the treatment more effective as well. What other things can we do in conjunction with those? You know, so pest controllers could come in and spray, but there's other things that we can also be doing as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there's monitors, sort of blunder traps we can put down. We've got the likes of sort of what we call an active trap, which is a heat source, like a light trap, which will help attract fleas or sense the presence of fleas. But the main thing, as you've touched on, is just the cleaning, being thorough of cleaning, disturbing that environment. You're taking away 3/4 of the life cycle, which means then you've only got the adults to knock down. And that's really, really important. just being sort of mindful of these sort of things. Washing, as you've said as well, there's certain things like you might get certain woolen clothing, pet bedding and stuff like that. That should be washed at a high temperature wash. Again, that will help get rid of any of those life cycles of the fleas. Look at as well just simple things like sealing around skirting boards, any sort of gaps, making sure if you've got floorboards down that the in between the floorboards are properly sealed, so it stops again anything dropping down, and you could have a lovely harborage below the floor level where you could have quite a happy flea population going through the life cycle, then emerging, coming up through the gaps in the floorboards. So that's quite important too.
So you've mentioned there washing of the bed and things like that. We generally say wash at a high temperature and then tumble dry as well, because that helps as well.
Yes.
And then, so if we think about heat, and so because sometimes it might not be the pest, we've already identified that the secondhand furniture and stuff. We can also do what we like heat treatments on these items as well, can't we?
Yes, yeah, we can. We can use heat. We can sort of heat treat, and we heat treat for a number of different animals. It's very, very effective. Again, it's going to be more effective against the first, second and third stages of the life cycle. The adults, unless we've got them enclosed, they're going to move quite quickly once it gets warm. A lot of insects become a lot more active as temperature goes up, as you know. But yeah, heat is definitely another good thing that we can do.
Okay, thanks, Rich. I think that we've pretty much covered it all there. And so thank you for joining me today. So that has been our expert talk session on fleas. Thank you very much.